Well, that just kind of says it all, doesn't it? And let me second that. Hooray for the riffraff, of which I am a proud member, and probably most of you are too. That was Casey Neal, one of my favorite guys, who's come back into the fold and returned to the sweet land of Portland after living in the wilds of New York City for a while. He figured out that he was in the wrong coast and came back where he belongs. Welcome home, Casey. So, hey, folks, this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. It's a cold and wet and drippy Friday morning out there, the beginning of Memorial Day weekend, and those of you who are going camping are going to get wet. Oh, well, this is Portland. What can I say? It's wet here. Big trees need rain and all that. So I'm Melody Silverwolf, and my lovely co-host, Ani Haynes, is scheduled to appear soon, any minute now. She's been having complications in her life lately. She's been ill, she's had car trouble, so I'm sure she'll be here eventually. Yes, that's it, eventually. I do expect her, let's put it that way. So, but for now, you're stuck with me, and all of you out there, almost 75,000 of you are listening right now, and so, you know, we'll just have to make do without her till she shows up. What can I say? But first, before we start talking about the tofu as the show of the show, as we like to call it, I have an announcement. This Sunday, the 28th, the Northwest Progressive Community will hold its regular monthly meeting at People's Food Co-op. That's at 3029 Southeast 21st, 21st and Tibbetts, between Powell and Division. You know where that is. It's been there forever. One of the most long-lived people's or food co-ops are in town. There's going to be a dessert potluck at 3:30. Gotta like that. Eat dessert first, right? And a meeting from 4 to 6. Here she is now.
Oh, ye,
I told you she'd be here. No, I told you she'd be here. I was merely battling my printer. I just said that, you know, you were having complications and you'd no doubt join us sometime soon. And here you are. Okay, so back to this. Yes, we're having a dessert potluck at 3:30 at People's on Sunday. And the meeting's from 4 to 6. And this month's speakers will be Barbara Ellis and the Shoe Leather Brigade, talking about the Oregon effort to have cities and counties submit bills of impeachment for the shrub to the U.S. House of Representatives, and Janice Thompson from Money and Politics Research Action Project, otherwise known as MIPRAP. Gotta like that. We'll be speaking on voter-owned elections. Do you like that? That's a good one. MIPRAP. Sounds like something that, like, the Coneheads would say, MIPRAP, something. So this is a free event. The Northwest Progressive Community is a nonpartisan organization working to promote education and to advance the progressive agenda through the electoral process. For more information, go to www.nwpcnews.org. So there you have it. That's Sunday at Pat People's, and that sounds pretty good. You ain't got anything going on. Go have some dessert and mingle and learn a few things. And welcome to my lovely co-host, who's looking better than I thought she might since she's been sick.
It's true.
The plague has hit KBU, and some of us have survived.
I mean, there are, like, I guess, several viruses going around here.
You know, what can I say? Community is a kind of tough, double-edged sword, you know?
I'm happy to say I've just had the flu.
We share everything in community, including things that we don't want to share, like viruses.
Sure. Okay, but enough about that. Sorry, I'm not sounding my best, not sounding perhaps my perkiest, and yet, there you go.
Yes, well, you know, like I said,
I just had to do it once,
in community, we do share everything, including Ani's stuffiness, and those of you who have been listening to our show for years are used to it by now, I'm sure. She's just kind of a congested sort of a girl.
And your own at times.
Yes, I have definitely had those
moments. And Joe Yours is at times, but we digress. This has been an incredible week for news. The last few days.
It certainly has, including the story this morning about aliens and tsunamis.
Oh. Yeah, there you go.
Can I say, may you live in interesting times.
There you go.
Well, we do.
But you know, in the last little while, there have been so many little tiny revelations, right? It sounds kind of oxymoronic, sure. Revelations.
Are you saying that we're living in the time of revelations, the end time?
No, that's not what I'm saying at all.
I didn't think so.
What I'm saying is that, you know, you have these, like, really amazing, eye-opening, wow, how'd that get into the mainstream news? Oh, my God, the gig's up. This is the crack. This is the chasm. And then people lose attention and things move on and people forget about that one by the time they hear the next one when it gets all the way through and it leaks.
That's why there's a website called The Memory Hole out there.
Sure.
Because it's like, you know, we all have a collective memory hole and that they do their best to put things out there that people might forget like that.
So I just, you know, I want to use this moment, this week's revelation, to say, hey, check this out. Let's keep this information spreading. Let's actually see what we can do to engage people in real, actual, grounded conversation about the fact that, wow, we're living in interesting times. Okay, check this out. The mayor of Portland, Tom Potter, has posted an open letter on his blog, which basically states that an FBI agent asked a city worker if she would be willing to pass information to him relating to people who work for the city of Portland.
And fortunately, he chose someone to speak to who was like,
who had some ethics.
That'll, like, happen when, like, pigs fly out my rear end, uh-huh.
Who had some ethics. But how many people no longer have ethics? How many people no longer question whether it's okay to talk to the FBI?
Too many.
Okay, so, I mean, chalk that one up to something that makes me say, huh. FBI, informants, people surveilling other people, those are not, you know, foreign concepts to me or Melody or anyone else in the activist community.
Nope.
We need to be aware that there are informants. Okay? That happens. We know that from history. Okay?
Sometimes there are people that we think are our friends.
So what we have to do is be smart, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can do a pretty long show, actually, at a time coming up soon about what that means, what it means to be smart in a time of surveillance.
Well, I think a lot of that's just common sense.
Common sense to you and common sense to people that haven't, like, read the same books and talked to the same people and had the same friends ain't common sense. It ain't that common. So, but it sure does make sense. So we'll do a show on that coming up. But there are some basics. We can get into that later. But it's important to realize that this is a time when the issue of surveillance, when the issue of informants, when the issue of Americans spying on Americans can actually get a little light of day again right here in our fair city.
And this is so
in a broader circle.
This is so reminiscent of, for those of you, since I'm older than Ani and many of the listeners out there, I am 52, and when I was a child, this was going on in big time.
Sure.
This was the McCarthy era was happening, the Cold War was happening, and people were being encouraged to peek through their neighbors' kitchen curtains and report them if they thought they were un-American or whatever, whatever. I mean, this is just you know, that same era reawakened, and I thought we put it to rest a long time ago, but obviously no.
Yeah, you know, I grew up, and Joe McCarthy was a name you didn't say very loudly.
That was a shame.
Yes. That was a shame in our nation's history. We move on from that. That won't happen again.
Any of you who aren't familiar with that period of history and don't understand why that's so important need to see Good Night and Good Luck, which is all about that. It features actual footage of Joe McCarthy. It's not an actor playing Joe McCarthy. They base the film around actual footage of Joe McCarthy playing himself. And so you can see him in all of his glory, if you
right.
want to put it that way.
So, you know, so I wanted to sort of look at this in the broader context because I think that that's how we can really engage public discourse. And that's really what this show's about. That's what Melody and I are talking about this morning, is engaging public discourse on the issues that we are living in not only interesting times, but dangerous times.
Yes.
And we have some responsibilities as citizens.
Well, and as far as that goes, you know, engaging in public discourse, I just, right before we got on the show, I was looking at Tom Potter's blog, and I encourage everyone to go there and not only just read what Tom Potter said, which is informative, but, you know, it's basically what you've heard already, but to read the comments. The comments are mind-boggling.
The comments are mind-boggling.
I never realized that there were so many morons sharing the city of Portland with me. I have to say, there's a lot of ignorance, lack of logic, just downright plain garden variety stupidity.
Well, so this is what I'm saying.
There, I mean, some of the things that people have said just blow my mind.
Well, this is what my point exactly is, that a lot of people have not had the opportunity to engage
yes.
in really good, grounded dialogue
well,
around
their idea,
issues of liberty, freedom, mm-hmm. the American way, whatever you want to call it.
Their idea is like name calling.
This
or,
is
you know.
Right, and this is a time that we can actually, believe it or not, I never thought I would say this. I mean, having been sort of well, in the activist community since I was 13 years old. You know, I never thought I would say this is a time that we can grab the apple pie, the American flag, and we can say, look, we're talking about your game, your values. We have drifted so far.
That's the thing, you know, the flag and the apple pie don't belong to the Republicans.
Sure.
They belong to everybody. And I'm just, you know, I really feel that that's a huge mistake that people on the left have made. It's like, oh, burn the flag, heck with that, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, I mean, yeah, that's
as
all well
as a flag
and good.
Burner myself, that's and you all have well, been too, Melody.
That's all well and good, but I'm saying the values that quote-unquote America holds dear don't have to only belong to the right wing. You know,
sure.
if you want to live in this country and you would like to have freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from, you know, harassment by the authorities, blah, 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 like is guaranteed in the Constitution, then you better own it and stick up for it or it ain't going to be there anymore.
Right. So, you know, that's the thing. It's time to broaden the dialogue. We can't keep it amongst ourselves. We can't smirk at others. We need to broaden the dialogue. It's that's our jobs right now. It's our responsibility. And part of the context, on indie media, there's also an interesting list of comments and whatnot.
I can imagine. I like to compare and contrast the comments between Tom Potter's blog and indie media.
Yeah, well, you know,
it'd be interesting.
You'd be surprised at how similar some of them might be.
That's what I'm saying. It'd be interesting to say, okay, read this. Which one is it from? Indie
right.
media or the blog? Make a little game out of it.
One of the postings, however, in Indie Media is actually from the Northwest Constitutional Rights Center. And
founded by our own Alan Graf.
And they, you know, have a press release around this incident of trying to place an informant at City Hall. And, yeah, the broader context that they're placing it in, of course, I'll just go ahead and quote this paragraph. The government's monitoring of Americans' phone calls, illegal wiretapping phones, and mining for personal data suggests a concerted effort reminiscent of Big Brother. According to national media reports, the FBI continues to infiltrate, monitor, and spy on critics and opponents of the Bush administration without any suspicion of wrongdoing. These actions appear to be politically motivated, are likely to chill political dissent, and may infringe upon fundamental freedoms protected under the U.S. and Oregon constitutions.
It may?
Yeah, well,
I would say that's pretty much a definite.
That's all that legal restraint. You know, I think it's important, again, to contextualize things and to broaden the dialogue. So let's face it, there's bad stuff afoot, and it is not time to go fetal. It is not time to just sort of go, this don't really matter. We can just ignore it. It'll go away. We won't give it energy. It'll go away. You know, most folks really don't want to think that fascism is actually something that could happen here or could happen now.
Just ignoring it didn't make it go away in Germany.
Right. The question really is no longer could fascism happen in the U.S., but how do we stop the fascist takeover? That needs to be the question.
How far are we going to let it go? Because it's already here.
How do we stop it? How do we stop it? Whether you are, you know, there's this continuum of belief in the activist community. I always like this. Are we a fascist country yet? Are we about to be a fascist country? Is it going to happen soon?
Oh, my God.
Has it already happened? Well, you know, let's quit that debate.
It's not important to draw the line about, you know, it's like saying, okay, it's like saying, well, you know, we're falling over a cliff and, you know, are we going to hit the ground at an oblique angle or, acute angle? What difference does it make? We're going to hit the ground, people.
So
you know?
That's why I would say the question really becomes, you know, how do we stop the fascist takeover? Excuse me. According to Dr. Lawrence Britt, who we've actually had the good fortune of interviewing in the past, and I believe Andrew Keller has also interviewed him, there are 14 warning signs of fascism. Some say that fascism is already here, but, you know, judge for yourself.
I do believe that 11 of them already applied, in our opinion, when we looked at those.
Judge for yourself, because, you know, really, I could see some scores made in each category. It's a matter of degree. So check it out. Number one, powerful and continuing nationalism.
Yep.
Number two, disdain for the recognition of human rights.
Yep.
Number three, identification of enemies, scapegoats as a unifying cause.
Yep, yep, yep.
Number four, supremacy of the military.
Yep.
Number five, rampant sexism.
Yep.
Number six, controlled mass media.
Yep, yep, yep.
Number seven, obsession with national security.
Yep, 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 yep.
Number 8, religion and government are intertwined.
Ooh, got that one going on.
Number 9, corporate power is protected.
Triple yep.
Number 10, labor power is suppressed.
Ooh, quadruple yep.
11, disdain for intellectuals in the arts.
Oh, there, yeah, we're there.
Number 12, obsession with crime and punishment.
Uh-huh.
Number 13, rampant cronyism and corruption.
Oh, yeah.
Number 14, fraudulent elections.
Well, I guess we have all 14 of them.
All right.
How about that?
So if the last time we checked this out, which was about a year ago, we were like, not so much with the disdain for intellectuals. Not so much.
Oh, absolutely.
But that was about a year ago.
It was going on then. Look at what they were doing to, what's his name, you know, that Indian guy. He just named just flew out of my head.
God, what's his name? Never will forget. Well, you know, while Melody wrestles
with that, let me continue
on. On the justice of roosting chickens,
Ward Churchill. Thank you. I just had a brain lapse there.
So, you know, it's important. It's important to check this out. It's really not looking too good for us, right?
No.
So, like I said, it's a matter of degrees, couple of points at least in every category. It's a little too much to ignore. Playing ostrich doesn't make police states go away. So clicking our heels together three times and imagining that we now go to that land that we're envisioning together, that autonomous free state.
It's not working.
Where we can all ignore these bummers and they just won't bother us anymore. That doesn't work either.
I have
right?
the wrong shoes on.
Yeah, it doesn't work. No. I've tried it in many, many shoes.
And ruby slippers?
Even.
Oh.
No, it doesn't work.
Well, forget
work.
That idea.
If it did, I'd be in that autonomous free state right now. But I'm not.
Okay, well, I guess we're going to have to do it the hard way.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk to each other and build solidarity. And we really don't have a whole lot of time to be doing that, so let's not waste any. The stuff is actually really freaking creepy. It's really freaking serious. That's just sort of the score.
Well, and what really disturbed me about the comments on the blog, which ties right into that, is how many people were just like, oh, well, what's wrong with the FBI? You know, they're just doing their job kind of thing. I'm like, what?
Well, funny you should mention that.
I don't think so.
Funny you should mention that. Jim Hightower has a really good commentary in his newsletter, The Lowdown. If you find it at Alternet, and I will go and get the URL for that in just one moment. But if you find it at Alternet, the April commentary is called Bush's Imperial Presidency. And the second is called Inside Donnie Rumsfeld's Orwellian Pentagon.
Yeah.
And this is the April and the May edition of his commentaries published in The Lowdown, which is his subscription newsletter. You can find the full text at Alternet. And he points out in the April commentary, Bush's Imperial Presidency, it starts out with a notice that there was a letter to the editor from a city just south of Austin where Hightower lives. And it's from a fella who says, you know, basically he doesn't care if the FBI or anyone else taps his phone. He welcomes them to do it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't care if he has to get a national ID card. He mm-hmm. welcomes them to give him one, and he'll present it whenever an authority asks.
And what's wrong with you? You have nothing. I have nothing to hide. You got something to hide?
Right.
Kind of thing, yes. It was very disturbing.
And you know, unfortunately, that attitude is prevalent, but not even in the majority of Americans, really. It's not even in the majority of Americans. The majority of Americans, I really firmly believe, know that something's kind of deeply wrong.
Well, it's like
they just don't know what it is.
I mean, just because you have nothing to hide, does that mean that you want to, like, you know, have the entire neighborhood watch through your bedroom
right.
window while you and your spouse do whatever you do? I mean, come on.
Right. That's why we have to work together in that sort of solidarity-like way. To raise awareness of unconstitutional and anti-democratic executive branch policies, practices, laws. I mean, as if they make laws. They certainly act like they make laws. Bush writes notes in the margins of his signatures as though he decrees laws like a king. I mean, this is ridiculous.
It's like a little kid crossing their fingers behind their back when they say, yeah, Mom, I promise I'll wash the dishes, and then that means it's okay if you don't.
Let's raise awareness. Near as I can figure, you know, Bush's approval rating is less than 30%.
Yeah, that's pretty much the kiss of death.
Whoa. So let's use this moment. Let's use this moment when Bush is, shall we say, already apparently naked as the emperor, And let's use this moment as Tom Potter exposes the fact that an FBI agent is looking to place an informant inside the City Hall of Portland.
Pathetic, isn't
Let's use this moment to actually broaden public debate, to actually widen the dialogue.
Especially because after last night and that appalling, disgusting display of whatever it was that I can't really say on the radio, between Blair and Bush making that press conference, the media are just falling all over themselves saying how great it was. Oh, Bush apologized for everything, blah, blah, blah. No, he didn't.
So when we're broadening that public dialogue, there's that. Yes. You know, talk about the fact that they really say nothing when they speak. It's amazing. Or they just lie. You know, you have so many examples of lies. You can just go ahead and grab a couple. But you grab a couple of them and actually show that they're lies. You know, don't just sort of answer hyperbole and rhetoric with hyperbole and rhetoric.
Yeah, that's the thing.
We need to ground discussion. I want to also point out it's really important to remind folks that we have political rights. That the right to privacy is really guaranteed in the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, mm-hmm. or at least what's left of it. It's not a commie pinko idea that's planted by the terrorists in our minds. We really have a Constitution.
At least we used to until they took the white out
Let's
to it.
Let's continue going forward with the idea that we have a Constitution. The right to dissent is protected. The right to protest is protected.
The right to peaceably
it's
assemble.
Not just sort of, oh, we're going to magnanimously.
I like magnanimous better.
I like magnanimous, too.
Like sanctimonious
we're just magnanimous
together.
Totally. Welded. Married. Forever. You know, we're going to allow you to protest in this area here if you're very, very good and you don't make much noise.
And I do believe we have the right to petition the government for redress of grievances, unless they widen that part out, too.
And, in fact, I've also heard that we have the right to participate in free and fair elections.
How about that?
Woo-hoo. We also have human rights. They're important,
but,
too.
You know, it doesn't say that those free and fair elections have to take place here. Maybe we have the right to do that in Botswana or something.
Well, I always thought that we had, you know, democracy in the U.S. I don't know.
I think you were deluded.
I was told in third grade. And the human rights of the U.S., you know, we need, again, to impress upon folks that we are now the laughingstock.
Yes, we are.
Internationally, the U.N. is calling for the closure of Guantanamo Bay.
As well they should.
Our unelected president supports torture there and elsewhere, writes into the margins that he won't be constrained on these in this area, has judicial advisors, legal advisors, talking to him about the degrees of pain that can be inflicted without it being torture.
I'd like to see them demonstrate those on George myself.
The more folks become aware that, you know, it's like remind folks of what they learned in third grade civics, really.
But they didn't. That's the point. They don't teach civics anymore.
There's still some of that going on. I'm sure of it. I've had a kid through public school recently.
Well, they curtailed it dramatically. Let's put it that way.
If I could. The more that folks become aware, the more they become outraged. And the travesties really only happen when people with good hearts go to sleep or watch Fox television until they fall asleep. So keep the discussion going. I really encourage folks to check out the Jim Hightower articles. I really encourage folks to make copies of articles and leave them around break rooms, worker bathrooms.
Buses.
Coffee shops, laundromats, waiting rooms, any place people are going to need to read something. You know, a little supplement to Better Homes and Gardens, you know. Just leave stuff around. Let folks read stuff. Help folks get a grip on what's going on around them and help folks name it. It's our job. It's our duties. As Dante said, the darkest places in hell are reserved for those who maintain their neutrality in times of moral crisis. Yeah, or if
Pretty
you prefer,
much.
Edmund Burke said, all that is necessary for triumph of evil is that good men do nothing.
And women, of course.
So,
and let me just let you remind you also that, you know, it is my duty to tell you that it's 1 minute after 8 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, and this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio, and we're talking about fascism and what we can do to stop it.
And what are your ideas? We invite your questions, your comments at this time, 503-231-8187. Good morning to you. You're on the air.
Good morning, Ani and Melanie. This is Leah Maka.
Uh-huh.
How are you guys this morning?
Doing well.
Well, first of all, I want to express some gratitude and appreciation. When I first started listening to your show a number of years ago, I used to turn you off because I wasn't too interested. And what I found is how much more interesting you guys have gotten over the years, and maybe that's just because I've become more aware. But
you probably thought we were crazy before, huh?
Yeah. I want to express gratitude and appreciation for the speakers you've brought to the show, and they've just been wonderful, and I really enjoy it. Now I don't want to miss you on Friday morning. It's like nobody can watch TV or turn on any other radios. It's taboo at my house.
Yay!
Anyway, a couple things. I went to hear David Corten last night, and it was very powerful and very impressive. I've been going to hear various speakers who come to town for the last few years, and usually there's a group. Seldom is it full, but it was a packed house last night.
Wow.
And his speaking was very impressive. He had a PowerPoint. One of the things he showed us was that over 80% of Americans' priorities are for a peaceful world and a healthy environment for children,
mm-hmm.
families, and communities. So he said, you know, the other 30% or 20%, you know, you don't need them. It was very interesting. It was a very powerful presentation about where we're at and where we're going, and he used some pretty graphic stuff to impress upon us the fact that, you know, it's not down the road, it's now.
Mm-hmm.
It is here now. There were a lot of organizations there representing the various, community, food and shelter and peace and stuff. So it was a very, very good presentation. The current issue of Yes Magazine, really, everybody needs to read this, guys. They're really talking it up. I mean, it's all over the place. So I wanted to share that and give people a heads up. There's so much going on in our community. And he did say Portland is the hub of most of what's happening in the country. So it was just great. I'm delighted to listen to you guys. In terms of fascism, I think that the most important thing we can do is, first of all, become aware, and second, to participate in shifting from globalization to localization.
Yeah.
And one of the things, he said three things last night over and over. He said, break the silence, and change the story. There were three things: break the silence, change the story, and something else, and I forgot. But it's like break the silence, and I think that is so much of what you guys helped to do, is to break that silence. So I just want to express my appreciation and gratitude for your
thank you
doing what you do.
Well, thank you, but you know, we only spark, you know, y'all to do that. I mean,
I know.
You know, there's just two of us here, and you know, our
yeah.
goal is to get everyone that listens to us to do
yeah.
a little bit
yeah.
of it as well, and sort of spread the ripple out into the pond.
I think one of the things that felt so good last night in this meeting was all the hopefulness about the things that are happening. Yes Magazine is pointing out some just incredible stuff.
Yes Magazine is a great resource if listeners are unaware of it. I
yeah.
believe that the foundation that David Corten's involved with also publishes Yes Magazine.
He's one of the founders, apparently.
It is a great resource
yeah.
for building the alternative that we...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's like we cannot wait to build the alternative. We can't wait till this collapses to start doing that. We really have to build that alternative together now in a very positive way as we break the silence, as we raise awareness of what's going on.
Yeah. There's a new movement that's coming that's been brought to this country from Europe. It's called the Sociocracy. And people can do a search on the internet for Sociocracy. There's a big meeting happening in June in Atlanta, Georgia. And it's like a social economic democracy, cultural democracy.
Huh.
And
sounds good.
Yeah, it came out of the end of World War II, out of Denmark, I believe it was, or Norway. They used this model to rebuild their country because there was no money available for them. And so this is the model that I'm been interested in it because it's part of Marshall Rosenberg's community now. They're using it as a model for change agency, social change, along the lines of compassionate communication and nonviolence. So I'm working on a business model using alternative building materials.
Excellent.
So it was great to connect with everybody last night.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much for your call this morning.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
503-231-8187, and we'd love to hear from you, get your thoughts and ideas into this conversation.
And just an announcement as well, if you have some time today,
Ani wants you.
We have our monthly listener guide mailing, and it has been delayed because of a number of factors. A whole bunch of things, not the least of which was the printer was a late getting the guides to us for an error that they had very little control over either. So it's one of those weeks,
Murphy's,
I guess, for all involved.
Of the listener's guide, yeah.
And that means it's a day late, so we really need to get it out today, and we really need a lot of help. So if you have some time between 9 o'clock and, say, mid-afternoon, and you can come down to 20 Southeast 8th. Charlie has made it. We're very happy to see Charlie.
He's here early, raring to go.
And we'll be more than happy to see you, too, when you come down and help us label listeners' guides so all good KABU members can get their information in the mail by June 1st.
And even bad KABU members.
There are no bad KABU members.
Oh, I'm sure there are some of us out there. You know, there's a few bad apples in every barrel.
No,
can
it's
I
just
say?
Like Barbara Woodhouse says, no bad dogs. 503-231-8187. Good morning to you. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I enjoy your show immensely. I always like positively revolting.
Thanks.
I like the cackling going on and the laughing and the positive attitude about it, too, you know.
Hey. Well, you got a cackler, you know. You
yeah,
just curl up in a ball.
Cackle or die.
I just love listening to it, man. I can sit here and listen to it all day. You know, I'm going to blow my horn a little bit.
All right.
You know, I think that the power lies in the money, okay?
Uh-huh.
And the money is in the power.
Mm-hmm.
And to that end, you know, instead of buying a more expensive car, last time I bought a car, I bought an economy car that gets over 30 miles to the gallon.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't go overboard. You know, I thought I got inherited some money from my mom. I thought, you know, I'm going to go out and get myself a neat car. And I went, no, wait a minute.
Right.
I backed off. And the rest of the money I put into a solar system on my hot water heater.
Right.
The hot water heater, of course, is using natural gas. And now the natural gas part of it is completely off. Of course, in these few gray days that I'm having here, I'll have to turn it back on for a little while. But it still heats the water up to a point where it uses far less gas.
Oh, yeah.
When it is on.
Sure.
And I've had it off for a month, totally off. My water temperatures have been around 150 degrees, okay?
Oh, that's hot.
That's very hot. And as a matter of fact, I have a scald protector on the damn thing.
I was going to say, otherwise you're going to be boiling yourself lobster.
I grew up in a family where my dad, anyway, now I won't go into that.
But
the next thing I'm going to have installed is I'm going to have installed some solar panels, some like photovoltaic solar panels.
I think that's really wise. It's a good investment.
Yeah, it is, and there's two things. There's tax incentives for that happening right now,
mm-hmm.
and for the next 2 years there are going to be tax incentives at both Oregon and federal. So you can get up to almost a half off of what you're paying on these things.
And if you were a homeowner out there thinking, gosh, this guy is a good idea, I think I want to look into that. How would you recommend? Where would the average Oregon homeowner, where should they look to find someone good to install these? Or, you know, where do you start? Do you look under solar and the yellow pages?
Yeah, look under the solar and the yellow pages. It's getting more and more well known. The people at...
I'm not necessarily asking you to endorse anyone, but I mean, just how did you start on your quest to find the right person to do this?
Always gone to the Earth Day celebrations mm-hmm. ever since they started way back in the whenever. So, I mean, I can't even remember the first one I went to. It was an awfully long time ago. But, you know, and I've always kept up with that kind of thing. The normal person might not. So the Yellow Pages would be a good place to go. There's Environmental Building Supplies outfits mm-hmm. on the east side that you can ask them and they'll tell you. You can go on the web.
And just look up Solar Portland,
Solar
Oregon.
Solar Portland,
yeah.
You got it. There's probably about two or three places here, one of which that I use.
Right.
And see, this is where we got to cut them off. We got to cut them off the nuts. Excuse my expression. I mean, just hit them in the pocketbook.
Well, that's very true. You know? We've got to do everything we can to stop supporting them, which is one of the reasons why I'm just outraged about PGE not being taken over by PUD or the city or something. The fact that PGE is still ripping us off, it just irks me to pieces, you know.
Oh, yeah, it just tears me up, too. And the fact that they're able to launch with our money, mind you, coming from our electric rates, these huge TV and newspaper campaigns against us. You know, against the public utilities plans, you know.
Well, they were just
And then they even marched their workers out there in front of everybody. The very workers who have lost all their
They got the shaft. They're going to be like, eating beans out of a can instead of having a comfortable retirement.
Exactly. So, I've been buying locally for the last 15 years and supporting the organic farmers because I think this is a worthy cause. It's a very worthy cause. It's actually going to be our survival in the end.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, why go buy corpo food at a big supermarket when you could buy food that's organically grown by someone locally?
Exactly. And this morning I'm having some people come in and replace the fiberglass insulation in my attic with this foam stuff that's far better. You know, and I'm just doing things like I'm putting cladding on the outside of my house so that eventually I'm hoping to get a net zero house. If I can get as close to it as I can, I'd be very, very happy because it just warms the cackles of my heart. There's that word again. You know, it just warms whatever they are. Anyway,
cockles.
Cockles, thank you. It warms those whatever they are in my heart to think that I am just taking that money away from PGE.
Well, that's the way to go.
And I'm taking it away from Northwest Natural Gas. It's going in, not only is it going in my pocket, but it's taking their power away from them.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that we all need to really, we need to rethink that, you know, so many of us have become sort of hypnotized by modern life, you know, by not just by TV, but by the whole vibe that's around us, which is designed to hypnotize us, and just we sort of go through the motions. We go to work, we go to the store, we come home, we make some food, we sit around the sofa, we go to bed. On the weekend, we mow the lawn. You know, it's just like we're sort of like stuck in this. This is the way it has to be, kind of thinking, and that really needs to change.
Well, and not only that, but people want to be done with things. And I've just noticed, you know, I've tried to talk to people about opening their eyes. A few of my colleagues, you know, trying to open their eyes about the questions that are still lingering, hanging like lead balloons, actually,
Your eyes when you live in a time like this.
You know, of the 9/11 attack, and nobody wants to look at it anymore. They want to run from it because they can't imagine, nor could I, that we might have been involved in some way.
See, denial is the biggest American contribution to human... to the human endeavor, I guess, I really think that in America, we've raised denial to an art form. Through a combination of a lot of things. We've told ourselves that this grand experiment's really working out and everything's great. We're the best country in the world. Apple pie, wave the flag, la da 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 da. You know, and that's, you know, there's a lot of things wrong with America
that we have conveniently not wanted
to look at. And, you know, my first reaction on the morning of September 11th, 2001 was I was heading out to a doctor's appointment and I happened to turn on, I was looking at the Weather Channel to see if it was going to rain. And so I sort of, you know, that's very near the news channel. So I was sort of clicking down through the news channels and I got to CNN and they were saying, you know, crisis in New York City. They're showing one of the towers and that just then the second plane hit the tower. And my immediate reaction, the very first thing that popped into my mind was, oh, my God, we did that. See, I guess I'm way more cynical than you. That was my first thought. This is something that's being engineered by, the White House or their friends, too. That was the first thought in my mind. We did this.
I don't know. I can't remember exactly what I thought. I was just too horrified. You know, I really was.
I guess I wasn't that surprised. I mean, look at all the horrible things that we've done all around the world for several hundred years, starting with Manifest Destiny. I mean, well, look at what we did when we first came here. I mean, when white people first came to this continent. I mean, The entire time that white people, Europeans, whatever, what have you, colonializers, you know, have been on this continent, we've behaved in a very, very egregious fashion to many other people around the world, exploited them, killed them, interfered in their governments, blah, 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 on and on and on and on and on and on. So, you know, I guess I wasn't really surprised. In fact, I guess I was sort of thinking that, you know, I'm surprised that this hasn't happened long ago and how spoiled Americans are that we've never had a war on our soil where other people attacked us. You know, we've had a civil war, and during World War II, yes, there was Pearl Harbor, but that's the only time besides one errant Japanese plane that I think maybe dropped one bomb on the West Coast.
Yeah.
That's ever happened to us. You know, other people live with this as a daily reality and have for many years because of us and
our
policies. So, you know, I guess I wasn't surprised. I wasn't shocked. And I was saddened, and I thought it was horrible, and, you know, a lot of other things, but I wasn't surprised.
Well, anyway, I just wanted to say that there are alternatives out there if we just pull our heads out of the darkness.
There you go.
You know where that is. And start, you know, stop, you know, start thinking about, what you know, there is disposable income out there. I live in the southwest area of town. I know there's disposable income.
Oh, there's a lot of it.
There's plenty left. I mean, to do this solar project and this stuff is going to cost me totally out of pocket after the income taxes and everything, probably about 15K.
Oh, that's not that much, though,
you know,
when you figure the return.
After all the returns I get, you know. And then on top of that, I'm doing the extra insulation and putting in new windows and da-da-da-da-da. So, okay, maybe I spend $25,000 or $30,000, okay, on this whole project of insulating and taking care of this and taking my house to almost net zero anyway, maybe not quite. Okay, then, you know, I mean, it's an investment, and it'll pay me over time. And I'm not worried about the investment so much as I'm thinking about how much of carbon I'm going to be taking out of the air. Totally, it's going to be huge amounts of carbon. I'm also distributing that power to the people myself.
That's right.
How is any terrorist going to come in here and wipe out? I mean, I would say if every house in the city of Portland had this on them, you wouldn't need much of a PGE power plant.
No, you wouldn't.
Need a very small generation. They could bomb the hell out of our power plant, and we'd still have power on the grid.
And as long as industry also followed suit.
Yeah.
Well, exactly.
Alcoa, you know, I mean, the you know, industrial uses of energy are huge.
The industrial people could deal with PGE, and all of us residential people could make our own power.
You know, the thing about this, though, is...
I totally agree with you. Just doing it, you know, taking some initiative and saying, I'm going to the responsible thing because I have the means to do it.
Right.
Now, for some people, $30,000 is sort of like, wow, sure would love to, but don't have the opportunity.
You know, look at what a Lexus costs.
Well, and
a lot of people aren't doing Lexuses.
Well,
I'm just saying.
Let's bring it down to just the pickup truck driver.
Sure.
Some of these pickup trucks are running anywhere from $18,000 to $30,000, depending upon options.
That's right.
The ones I see on the road are probably running right around $25,000.
Sure, but I think that's actually you're speaking absolute truth to those that are of that class that do have
own
their own houses and have those toys. Yeah, it's important to think about prioritizing where you're going to end up putting that money. You know, you want more toys and participating in affluenza, like Melinda and I have done programs about before.
Right.
Or are you going to actually invest in a real solid future?
Or certainly.
And do something that's socially responsible for your community and good for you.
$30,000 is not that much compared to the average price of a house here if you own your house.
It is nothing.
Well, I do want to throw it in there that it's not nothing because I come from the class that doesn't have the toys and we don't really do that. We really don't. And I actually did buy a house last year and I'm shocked and amazed that I was able to do that. But, you know, $30,000, I have to say, that's not in my means right now.
But
it is something that's really cool.
So
I go, I want to do that, and I'm going to look for ways that technology like that will be affordable. And how much good would it do us as a society to actually put some more support towards getting people off of the grid and getting people into self-sufficient energy for all the reasons that you've just talked about?
Right.
You know, if only we could actually use some of, you know, I know we have some rebates, we have some tax benefits for doing things like that, But think about how much more social support we could actually do so that folks who are in houses of pretty dang modest and less means, you know, the working poor who manage to own a house, because some of us can, some of us do, you know, those folks also need to have the opportunity to get off the grid.
Like PDC funds, for example.
Right.
That they
How can we make this houses actually for folks that don't have the $30,000 to invest themselves after rebates?
Well, it comes.
It's important.
Income tax credits. I mean, it's part of it. I think that could play a larger role. Plus,
sure.
I believe that as people buy more of these devices, I think that the price should come down a bit, you know, because they're becoming more and more mass-produced.
Well, there was supposedly a big breakthrough that happened earlier this year in South Africa. There's a plant that manufactures solar panels, and they figured out a way to dramatically cut the cost or something, or the efficiency of manufacturing them, so they're supposed to come down in price. But there's so many solar panels are being bought in Europe that they can barely keep up with the demand, you know what I mean? So for a little while they'll stay high, but they're bound to get cheaper as time goes on.
Well, and I can't imagine, you know, especially in mid to all the way down through California and the South states, why there's, you know, my mom had a condo down in Palm Desert, all natural gas, not a solar panel in sight.
It's ridiculous.
Down there. And the sun is, you know, almost, you know, 7 days a week.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Right. We need to reprioritize as a nation. We need to reprioritize.
Exactly. You know, we could save so much power just doing that.
Absolutely.
You know, it's incredible. And take it away from the people who are taking that money, and they're corrupting our government with it, and they're corrupting our local officials and whoever else with their dough. And us, too, by the way. They're dragging all their BS on TV and spending all our rate-paying money to tell us that they're the best around and that we shouldn't have PUCs.
Right.
So
thanks very much for your call.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 503-231-8187, the number to call to join us, and good morning to you. You are on the air.
Hi, Ani. How are you?
Good.
Good morning.
Good. How are you, Melody? Let's see. I was looking at this Stephen Biko quote about the most potent weapon of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for me, as a African American living in Portland, what I've chosen to concentrate on is the mind of the oppressor, and also the mind of the white folks who claim to be about change and really analyzing their behavior and trying to understand how they think.
Uh-huh.
Because I hear a lot of words about justice and change and wanting to make things right, but I see a lot of behavior that indicates happiness with the status quo, happiness with white supremacy, comfort with the status quo, but a desire to appear as if they don't really like the way things are going, but lapping up their white supremacy, their white privilege just the same.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. Can I ask, sort of along the lines of last week, we did a program around gentrification, and
I listened to it. It was a wonderful show.
There was a snippet that I caught from an NPR intro that I was unable to actually hear the audio for, but the snippet from the intro was, Mercury guy, talking about the successful urban renewal of Alberta, which managed to keep its edgy diversity.
Oh, please.
Right, right.
And that sort of comfort with white supremacy?
Well, of course.
Okay.
I mean, the thing is, I think that's a great quote because, see, what I notice around this town, and it's nationwide, of course, is that, you know, hipsters, like white hipsters,
mm-hmm.
want to be attached to people of color, cultural aspects of people of color without having to be people of color. You know, there's this comedian, Paul Mooney, who says everybody wants to be black, but nobody wants to be black.
Yeah.
And basically what he means is everybody wants to be edgy, but they don't want to be a nigga.
Right.
You know,
like
white folks don't want to be black, but they want to steal certain things from us.
Yes.
And the bottom line is Portland is one of the best case, best psychological case studies for racism with a smile, and racism while wearing hemp and while listening to Bob Marley. I mean, people yep. can actually do these things and actually have complete and utter contempt for non-white people, and I see it every day. And you cannot tell these progressives that they're racist. You cannot tell them, you cannot ask them questions like, how come we have marches for people in Iraq, but we don't have serious marches for people who live in this community
yeah.
who are getting railroaded out, who are
yeah.
getting redlined out, who can't get a job.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
why don't we have those kind of marches where we can actually affect change right here at home? They can't hear that.
Right. Well, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, I move in a fair amount of my time is spent, you know, moving among, you know, the white dreadlock sort of crowd, to some degree. And that's really, I have called people on that before. And you see a lot of that in the hippie movement, especially where people are, you know, it's cool and hip to, like you said, be into Bob Marley or to wear dreadlocks or whatever, but you don't see them coming down to support the communities right here in Portland or right in their hometowns, wherever they are, that are being oppressed. I mean, they just basically want to be cultural appropriationists. And
right.
Like, for example, yesterday I noticed the sign on out on my near where I live out in East Portland that just cracked me up. I'm driving down the street with my friend who's Latina, and I point to the sign. This tanning place, it says, "Darkest tans around, get dark." And I'm like, wait, get dark. So you're supposed mm-hmm. to look as dark as possible. But then if you are really a person of color, even if your skin is actually lighter than the darkest white person's tan, then you're treated crummy. But all white people are supposed to try to look as dark as possible. Wait, something's wrong with this picture. We got a good laugh out of it, you know.
Actually,
but,
can I just tell you a great quote that
yeah.
I've read? This guy named Neely Fuller, African-American PhD back in D.C., he has this wonderful quote. Now, check this out. I want to hear what you guys have to say about this. The quote is, "White people don't hate black people because black people are black. White people hate black people because white people aren't black."
Uh-huh. Okay.
You get that?
I can get that. And let me throw into that. I mean, there's a something that I think would behoove us, like societally, is if white people had some damn culture.
Yes.
A culture that was not based in supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, culture that was not based in a mall. That's not culture. And I think that one of the things that really drives that whole cultural appropriation culture vulturing is what we always sort of called it, is the fact that we, as, you know, Euro-Americans, aren't raised to think of ourselves as Euro-Americans. We're not raised to think of ourselves with any ethnicity. So we have to grab what we see in others that we don't have in ourselves, and we decry, like we really despair. We miss it. We don't
mm-hmm.
even know what we miss.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stupid, and it's pathetic, and we need to get back to what we are.
Well,
you know,
we're also
we are all.
Think of ourselves as the norm, and people of color are not the norm.
Right,
you know?
Exactly, and that's where I was going next. I'm really glad you got there, Melody. It's the whole circle of Eurocentrism and what is considered the normative value. And when you are a member of the dominant culture, as Euro-Americans are the dominant culture, you're not aware of your privilege. It's like the fish is not aware of the water in which it mm-hmm. swims. All you have to do is...
But is that really true, though? Is it that... I mean, because, see, the reason I read that Steven mm-hmm. Biko quote earlier is because I believe that, and you guys were talking about fascism,
mm-hmm.
see, I believe that we are bred... See, none of this is an accident. I don't
mm-hmm.
think that people are clueless. I think people are bred into unconsciousness, which may be, you know, splitting hairs,
uh-huh.
but I think... We're bred into, or white folks are bred into, an unconsciousness around race and around
uh-huh.
culture, even
oh,
though
I agree.
You guys both know that you came from somewhere, right?
Yes.
Right.
I mean, clearly your originators, your people, came from a particular place, but they use this concept of non-race with white people, or normative, you know, and keep it vague so that you all, in my opinion, will not understand the connections between your culture and other people who have culture, and it creates this huge glass ceiling that prevents people from consciously understanding who they are, but identifying with a racist, fascist society.
I agree with a whole lot of that. But add to that the understanding that race, when applied to Euro-Americans, has been shifting.
Mm-hmm.
Because 110 years ago, 120 years ago, Irish weren't considered white.
Neither were Italians, yeah. So, I mean, but I do think that you're right in the sense
that... But in the last 100
context,
years,
yeah.
You know, it's like I believe that there has been a really deliberate effort to unify the understanding of white and expand mm-hmm. that to create a more populated dominant base from which to maintain supremacy. I think that that's probably true, too. But I think that one of the things that we need to do is to quit looking at, we as Euro-Americans need to quit looking at folks who aren't Euro-Americans as other, as exotic, as anything other than people. You know, we need to look at our own culture. We need to start identifying with our own culture. And we need to share culture, again, leveling as equals. Because there are interesting things in culture. And I'm
but
fascinated.
Can I ask a question,
culture.
Annie?
Sure.
Annie, rather.
It's okay.
How do you do that? I mean, I think what you're saying is absolutely right, but how do you do it?
One of the ways I do it is trying to point out normative values that are Eurocentric. Because this is why I say we're unconscious, you know, of it, that people don't recognize privilege. Because in my experience working in the social change groups I'm working in, that has, you know, been one of my roles is looking at something and going, this is Eurocentric, right? We need to look at how this is disinviting other people. We need to look at that. And I get to be the person that says it a whole lot. Uh-huh. And sometimes it resonates with others. Sometimes other people are saying it too. And sometimes it's a really long uphill battle trying to convince folks that Eurocentric values exist.
Yeah.
And what we need to do is get about the conversation of what other values get brought to the table so that we can have a truly inclusive, you know, community. It's daily work for me, and that's how we do it. It's daily work, and it needs to be spread out amongst all activists. We need to really take a long, hard look at race. We need to take a long, hard look at classism. We need to take a long, hard look at sexism. We need to take a long, hard look at racism.
Well, and also, in my experience, I was married to a man of color for 5 years, and my best friend is Latina. And so when you spend time with people of color, many white people don't spend time with people of color. They say, oh, yeah, I have black friends or whatever, but then they're not really people that they socialize with a lot. When you spend a lot of time hanging out with these people, you see racism up close and personal. You can't avoid it. You can't ignore it, assuming that you're not, you know, totally an ostrich. And, you know, that raises an opportunity for lots of dialogue, like Ani was just saying, to talk about it. I talk about this with my friend. I used to talk about it with my husband. And, you know, it's hard to pretend.
I mean, you got to talk about it with other whites.
Yeah, it's hard to pretend. But it's hard to pretend. Well, and the people, there's other people with us when we were socializing, and, you know, we all talk about it. And, you know, it's hard to ignore when you actually interact with people of color on a regular basis and with a multiracial groups of people. It's something that you can bring up in conversation and you can start talking about and deliberately looking to end, you know, segregation of only hanging out with other white people. And that's something we all, the my friends and I work on a lot, you know, and the other organizations I'm involved with, you know, we go out of our way to bring people of color in, to get them involved in leadership positions, to get to know them, to invite them to our homes, to really make real connections with them and to really interact with them as people and not just as token people that some of my best friends are, fill in the blank.
Yeah, but see, that's the problem, though, because there are a lot of people out there who can actually interact with black people. I was married to a white person who, sad to say, is not an ally of
uh-huh.
people of color.
Right.
Okay, but let me just say this. There are a lot of people who have the ability, white people who have the ability to be close to people of color, to spend time with them, to even sleep with them, but they are not able to. I mean, they're doing it for motives other than, they're doing it for unconscious motives. I mean, there's this
that
whole
may be true,
idea
yes.
of there's this whole idea of, you know, it's kind of like the magical Negro thing in film. I don't know if you guys are into that at all. But the whole idea that you've got black people in films often who bless white people. You know, like, I've lost my golf swing, so I need some black caddy
who's
this mystical figure who knows everything, except he doesn't know how to end racism, white supremacy. But he can help this white guy get his swing back, get the girl in the end of the movie, right?
Right.
You have white people today, and I've met them in Portland, Oregon, who treat other people of color like that. You know, make me feel good about myself. You know, make me feel like I'm a good white person, not racist, because I'm hanging out with you.
Right.
And it's not real.
Right.
And you try
to tell
them that, and they look at you like you're out of your mind.
Right.
Well, they have to be willing to, you know, they have to be willing to really be in for a penny, in for a pound. If they're really your friend or your partner, you know, they're really committed to you as a person, then they're going to be there for the not-so-fun stuff as well as just the look at me, I'm hanging out with black people kind of stuff.
And true enough, it's hard to get people to hear that. I have had very little success myself, but it doesn't stop me from saying it. So it's important. You know, it's important that we just keep on doing the work, and it's important, I think, especially that Euro-Americans take responsibility for trying to reach out to other Euro-Americans and saying, hey, you know, we need to educate ourselves and each other about what it is to be a person of privilege, what it is to live as a supremacist. We need to get about that business. That's the business of social change. That's what, you know, to do anything and leave that out of the equation is disingenuous at best.
Well, I don't see how you can actually create change without that change in the mindset of white folks. And I don't see there being a great incentive because, you know, for me as an African American, I have a lot of incentive to try to change things because I've been racially profiled. I'm afraid of the police. You know, I know what happens to men like me. You know, I should be in jail by all rights, you know, because so many of my generation are.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I have to worry about stepping on the landmines of white supremacy, but white folks don't have to worry about that.
Well, but I think there is a huge incentive for everyone.
It's to live as whole beings.
Yeah, I don't want to live in a world like this. I mean, I don't want any children or grandchildren or, you know, those to come to have to live like this, whatever color they are, whatever gender they are. I want to live in a world where this isn't the reality. I mean, that's
it's
my motivation.
Like you know, when I look at sexism, you know, this is where I get, you know, a little more of my direct experience being a woman. And when I look at sexism and I look at male supremacy and I think, why would men ever want to give up patriarchy? When in fact, I know many men who want to, whether they know how to or not, is a whole different issue.
Right.
But who want to.
At least they say they do. They think they do. You know?
Well, why would that be? Well, because actually it benefits men to give up patriarchy because then they can be whole people too and not deny their feelings, not be afraid of being queer baited into being somebody they're not, you know, by, you know, needing to prove themselves in some manly way, you know, whatever that is. Because sexism harms men and harms women, and racism
Absolutely.
Harms everyone.
Yeah, it does.
Too.
I mean, it puts all kinds of barricades in our society that shouldn't be there. It causes all kinds of psychic pain to everyone, whether they, you know, whether they
and
realize
just,
it or not.
And
I agree,
it's
but
a,
I think
it's
it,
a hard
it does benefit.
Road to get people to hear that.
Oh, people.
I'm not trying to argue with you guys, but
yeah.
I agree. It is. I understand what you're saying. It's true. However, the problem is that there's so many perks.
Yeah.
There's so many perks.
Sure.
And I think people don't want to let go of those perks. And you have to ascend to a level of consciousness. I mean, you guys obviously have ascended to a level of consciousness where you recognize that you're being harmed by it. Just like I feel like I've recognized how, you know, my male privilege has harmed me. And I'm like, man, I need to back up. I want women to lead, you know.
Uh-huh.
We don't need to lead.
I mean, it is about consciousness. I think you're right. And, you know, well, the same thing applies not just to racism or sexism, but to all the, you know, all the political things we were talking about earlier in the show, recognizing that fascism is a reality here in this country. People don't want to see that either. They don't want to see that they're going to have to, that their cushy job that they make a lot of money so they can buy their pickup truck is, you know, killing people in the third world or whatever. I mean, people have to look at a lot of hard things. This is a time when we all have to, like, really take the hard look, and it's not an easy time to be alive, and we have to make a lot of painful choices, but it's either that or we're all going
to
perish.
We have to come to
a
lot of painful reckoning, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like none of us have lived pure lives, but we have to deal with what we've done, we have to deal with our choices, and we have to make empowered choices in our future.
Right. Well, so, I have to go, but I just want to say, Ani, that I love you, and I think you're, and this is not a diss of you, Melody, but I just love you, Ani. I just want you to know.
Aw, thanks.
You're welcome. Take care.
I'm glad to hear you're back.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for calling. And 503-231-8187, the number to call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi. You're on the air?
Oh, yeah. Boy, you've had such great callers this morning. I just wanted to react to the first caller. The he just reminded me of a couple of my pet peeves. But, you know, I think he really is bringing up an issue that I think is of primary importance, because until we can kind of end our consumption society, we'll never lose, the government will never lose its grip on us.
That's for sure.
A couple of my pet peeves are, the thing is, really saving energy is about saving money, because no matter how you figure it, every dollar you spend sooner or later ends up being used in energy, whether it's mining the iron ore or whatever. But, so one of the things I think that's been foisted on us are hybrid vehicles. Now, I don't want to be negative about that, because it's wonderful that people are really trying to, you know, to get more efficient vehicles. But, you can buy other vehicles for a lot less money that get better fuel mileage. And then if you look at the cost of the batteries and things on hybrid vehicles, the actual cost of operation is much higher.
Uh-huh.
So you could go out and you could buy a very efficient, small, used car for a tremendous amount less money and get just about as good a mileage, or like the smart cars that are in Canada and Europe, they get better mileage even than, a brand new hybrid. So that's one good thing. And the other thing is photovoltaics. You know, my son's a physicist, and he's built solar-powered vehicles in college. And anyway, photovoltaics are so expensive that the most efficient of them, it takes so much energy to make them, and they cost so much to buy that they may never produce enough electricity in the life of the cell to actually pay for itself.
Huh.
So we're much better off spending our money on, like, wind power, and I make biodiesel. And if we had a really efficient means of collecting all of the resources that we throw away in our world,
sure,
you know, our
yeah, people, it seems like people could put that stuff out with their recycling, and the recyclers could pick it up and take it to the biodiesel composting station or whatever. You know,
yeah, you know, even if we had a really clean way to get our motor drain oil and those other things, they're wonderful resources.
Well,
if they're clean,
just have the shops save that. I mean, they can't just pour it down the drain.
Well, they do recycle it a lot. They recycle it.
Yeah, they do now, but it's pumped into a big truck and it's really messy, and it needs to be very highly recycled again.
Uh-huh.
Whereas if it were really clean, it'd save the recycler a lot of money. Well, I guess plastic's that way too. Anyway, that was kind of
I think that's always an interesting point.
Yeah.
I don't know at this point. I know that there has been some breakthrough in the manufacture of solar energy components.
They keep doing a better job, and it is something we need to pursue.
Uh-huh.
But at this time, especially Oregonians shouldn't be looking at photovoltaic panels for their roof. The solar water heat's a really good deal. But there are a lot of really good deals that you can do to your house. In Oregon, it's insulation.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to react. You've had some great callers.
All right. Well,
the second caller is the other great thing in the world about the Great Revolt is that, you know, all of us in our hearts need to really truly love our fellow man, and that's the other way that we can't legislate that we can change the world. So.
Right on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah.
Well,
and let's see, it is 8:45 in the morning, and Melody handed something.
I have a real quick announcement. News just in, the AP is reporting 4 ambulances on the scene as U.S. Capitol Police continue to investigate the sound of gunfire in the garage of the Rayburn Congressional Office Building across from the Capitol. Sounds that seem to be gunfire were reported to have come from the lowest level of the Rayburn Office Garage, and Basically, that's all we know.
And apparently we have, intrepid news hound Teresa on the line
well. So
good morning, Teresa.
Hi. Well, I've been trying to call you for about half an hour on that, but actually I initially wanted to call just to use your program shamelessly and announce that my program is changing time next week.
That is pretty
shameless. Self-promoter.
Shameless hussy is
I know. I'm awful, but I'll be on at 9 a.m. instead. And, yeah, I've got more on that. Though the Capitol is currently reopening, this according to Raw's story, status of the Rayburn Building has remained unchanged. Another email has been sent to staffers confirming the status of the Rayburn Building and garage. Passageways between the Capitol and Rayburn Building are currently closed. Traffic moving in the direction of Rayburn is closed off. A House Intelligence Committee interrupted testimony and sealed doors. Members are reportedly still inside. And just when you go off at 9 a.m. Pacific, the Capitol Hill Police plan to hold a news conference. So the ambulances are still there, and it looks pretty strange. And, you know, I think it's ironic that it's happening just as y'all are talking about fascism. Mm-hmm. Well, what if they decide to go full bore? What are you going to do then? You know, if they take KABU off the air, where are you going to meet? I suggest KABU.
I don't know. It's very ironic that we're hearing through the phone line a sound that sounds like distant helicopters. I'm sure that's not what it is, but it sounds like distant helicopters.
I think that's our crappy phone.
Yeah, it's kind of entertaining, you know?
Here they come.
Yeah.
I'm getting my skillet ready, by God.
Yeah, well, you got a skillet, you're safe. Yeah. Well, thanks for being on.
Yeah,
and
thanks for those rather provocative questions. And, probably good to think about stuff.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for calling. Well, let me know what's let you know what's coming up this morning on KABU. In just about 12 minutes, it'll be 9 o'clock, and we'll hear from Cindy Sheehan speaking on The World Can't Wait and the Illegality of the War in Iraq. At 9:30, Jim Thompson will interview Laura Peterson of Hands to Heart International, an organization that helps orphan children and women lacking education and employment. At 10, Lisa Loving speaks with local writer Ariel Gore, founder of Hip Mama, magazine editor of an author of a new novel, The Traveling Death and Resurrection Show. At 10:30, it's Boneheads and Bigots with Pat McGuire, my favorite half hour every month. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, the topic is the Enron verdicts. Guests include journalist Greg Palast. So don't go anywhere. Stick around.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
But even more cool is your opportunity to help KABU get its monthly listener guide out to our members. You can come by the station anytime between about now and, I'd hope for the middle of this afternoon, we'll be wrapping up.
You'll be wrapping them up? You're going to duct tape them to the chairs?
No. KABU are here at 20 Southeast 8th. You just can't stop talking about stuff that you're hearing this morning. You need people to talk with. You don't want to just sit alone in your apartment going, maybe you get off work sometime about noon and you think, now it's time to go talk to folks that I can really have a good conversation with. Come to the mailing party. That's what I say.
Maybe you just don't have anything better to do.
Maybe you're a bit bored. Could be a bit bored, I suppose.
It's rainy and gloomy outside. Come on down.
What better to do than come mail listener guides at your very own community radio station? We are located at 20 Southeast 8th.
Between Burnside and Ankeny.
Burnside and Ankeny. There we are, mail-in listeners' guides. Today. You can call us. You can call the front desk, 503-231-8032.
But not yet. There's nobody out there.
They will be there at 9 o'clock, and they will answer any questions you have about how you can get involved with listener guide mailings. Okay. That said, let's move along. And good morning to our next caller. You're on the air.
Good morning. I was listening to the Enron coverage, and when they were found guilty, I was just so excited. I was so happy.
That was a hoot.
I want to see you do the perp walk in their little orange jumpsuits.
I just didn't know if they'd get off or not because they're just so full of it. And the jury said, gee whiz, are you kidding? They got to be lying. And they found them guilty with the amount of years that they can get, they're pretty much both going to serve life sentences. So that's wonderful.
Well, you know, I'm not so hot on them going to prison. I want to see them make money and pay all those people back, like all those people who PGE who don't have a pension anymore.
That is why I called. I wanted to tell you why. I went and got this movie, and I turned it on last night after hearing what their sentence was going to be. It's called Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, have you seen it?
Uh-uh.
It's a movie. It's a documentary on them. It's a documentary, the whole deal. You get the whole from you know, from beginning to end, and it's them on the documentary.
And where does one find this documentary? And
in Blockbuster Hollywood.
Oh, so it's around.
Previously viewed. You
well
can get it for like $7 or something. Anyway, I just found one in the store
enough.
I was in. I hadn't watched it, but then when they were guilty, I just thought, oh yes, and I watched and I thought, my God. You know, all you need is this documentary, and you could, you know, these guys should be at shot. Anyway,
not until they pay people back.
the reason I was calling was this.
Capital punishment bad.
About the retirement. The retirement funds lost because of what they did. I mean, you've got to see this movie. You've got to see it. It shows the amount of money that they have stolen and how many people they've stolen their retirement funds from, people who were honest, trusting, worked for years, who didn't have a clue. The only ones that knew what was going on were just the top guys, and they were the ones skimming all the billions. But anyway, this is the reason I'm calling this. This morning I heard that they're out on bond, and I thought, wait a second. If
well, they made them surrender their passports.
If there's one penny those guys have, you know, let's give it to someone for their retirement. You know, I believe they are the greatest flight risk kind of guys of all time. I mean, these are big criminals.
Oh, yeah, criminals. Definitely.
And the flight risk, big time. Why are they out on bond?
Right. Well, I believe they made them give their passports in, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee they won't run.
These guys, you know, have stuff stashed all over the place. They could have their heads cut off and have a new head put on.
They probably have massive offshore bank accounts.
Exactly. I mean, they could get whole new bodies. They could do plastic surgery and be a nose like in Woody Allen's movie. And just go somewhere, you know, around the world as a nose in a box.
And again, your comment,
it's
just
true.
Really falling, falling
the
on the
flight risk.
Falling on
time.
The tale of the conversation around white supremacy. Let's compare and contrast.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Let's
imagine
compare and contrast.
Someone, a black person who is not out on bond, they think maybe robbed a 7-Eleven for, you know, a six-pack.
Right.
Well, let's compare and contrast to, like, Mumia Abu-Jamal, for example. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Kenley and Skilling, they were basically, not only did they steal billions of dollars, but they also were responsible for the deaths of a number of people.
Well, the previous conversation that you had about being empowered, and by being empowered, you need to be informed. I was thinking of that specific Enron case. It happened because the information coming out was information coming out through the media that was it was whitewash stuff. It was stock exchange. You know, the NPR does its marketplace. You know, it has an hour of marketplace, and it gives you the stocks and how they're doing. And so this is basically why everyone didn't know that this was coming.
Right.
Because the information that was coming out that's supposed to empower us was not correct. It was whitewash. And it's the media carries this information. It doesn't explore it. There was one woman at Fortune magazine who said, this looks funny. This is this young girl. And she demanded an interview with Skilling.
Yeah.
And he just told her he didn't have time to talk to, you know, her. He had an important meeting. And so she went ahead and did the article. It woke up a couple of people. But basically all the stock market guys were doing the stock stuff in accordance with what they were being told. No one was investigating.
Right.
Anyway, she, you know, it finally broke and, you know, Enron collapsed. The thing that kills me, being close to retirement soon, is the money that these guys have and that they're out on bond.
Yeah.
I just can't believe it.
It does seem like to recompense the workers should be the priority.
Well, yeah, I mean, these people are looking at basically like poverty in their retirement when they would have been comfortable.
Set.
Yeah, they would have been able just to kick
They'd
back.
They'd been promised
and,
for their entire
you know,
lives.
Play a little golf, you know, putter around in the yard and have a decent income, you know.
I'd line them up and shoot them. The no, really, really, you should see this documentary.
Remember, capital punishment is bad, okay? Capital punishment is bad.
Well, the smartest guys in the room, if you see this, you would line them up and shoot them. But anyway, whitewash.
We gotta move along.
We gotta run.
Okay, it's just hard to be empowered when the information that comes through all the media is incorrect.
Absolutely true.
So we have to find the information.
And we have to share it with each other when we find it. Thank you so much for doing that.
Bye. Democracy Now! This morning, where they're going to be talking about that, and they'll have Greg Palast on.
Nepad, a drumming melody. And let's go ahead and take our last caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I want to follow up the caller who was talking about race relations in the United States. Probably the most important thing and unfortunate thing about this country is that there's a small class of people that keep bringing, you know, people from various parts of the world here, and we're all supposed to kind of like live together and love each other.
These people that are bringing people here?
The banking, a property-owning elite, the invisible 1%, the Beamer-driving wave after wave after wave of immigration, and they do want people to lose their culture from back home. Probably
wait
the most important...
No, no,
let me...
No, 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 this is my show. Hush. Who are they bringing in for what? For what reason are they coming? What is the purpose of bringing these people here? To do what?
To exploit them in the... factories and wherever, the fields, the factories.
Well, bankers don't employ illegal aliens, do they, or immigrants?
But the bankers make money off of every rent and lease home loan and mortgage.
I will give you that. In fact, it is global economic policy driven by the WTO, the IMF, the World Bank that drives immigration. I will give you that.
That's definitely true.
The property-owning classes have been entrenched since the time of the Constitution.
Sure.
The strength of Northern European culture is organizing against the power structure. It's like having a guild. It's like having free medical care in Northern Europe that everybody has. We're losing that.
I got to say this about that. We got a minute left. You and I could have this conversation for about 9 hours. We're not going to do it justice in the last minute and a half.
And you would learn a lot. You would learn a lot because your viewpoints are that the people are to blame for the problems. The system is to blame, and they create problems for the people.
I agree with you that the system is to blame. I agree with you there. I agree that the system of global hegemony and the global corporate structure through the WTO, the IMF, the World Bank creates human misery worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
I'd agree with you there.
I'd also like to point out that caller, just like you and I, no doubt is descended from people who were immigrants. How about that?
Yeah, that's true too. And there's no way that I'm going to be able to address racism and the immigration issue in a minute and a half and have it any justice.
Nor does it really apply to what we were talking about.
Again, to wrap, all I can say is find inspiration wherever you can, but it's really, really super important that we do something. And when we do something, we do it together. We do it in solidarity with each other. If, that we learn to work cross-culturally, that's imperative. We need to work cross-culturally. And it is not enough to sit by and smirk as folks who have just had, you know, their world, smirk at folks who have had their world explained to them on the evening news. It's not hip. It's not productive. It's not chic. It's not cool. It's not excusable to be a cynic. We got to work together to bring about a more just society now. Look, I'm making my engineer apoplectic. With that, we say adieu.
Bye.
And it's 9 o'clock. You're listening to the radio Friday morning radio zine. You are listening to Positively Revolting. Coming up this morning, we'll be presenting a talk produced by TUC Radio. Cindy Sheehan speaks on The World Can't Wait and the illegality of the war on Iraq. At 9:30, Jim Thompson interviews Laura Peterson of Hands to Heart International, an organization that helps orphan children and women lacking education and employment. At 10 a.m., Lisa Loving speaks with local writer Ariel Gore, founder of Hip Mama magazine and author of a new novel, The Traveling Death and Resurrection Show. And at 10:30, it's Boneheads and Bigots with Pat McGuire. Then at 11, it's Democracy Now! The topic is the Enron verdicts. Guests include journalist Greg Palast. And now, Cindy Sheehan.